part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn. I am on the line again with my friend Jay Holtham, and also Hello. We have on the line my friend Liad Goldberg, who Hello. And we are here to discuss part two of Luke Cage. Paul Edwards was not able to join us. He was on our part one episode. So we have Liad sitting in and joining with us. He was going to be with us here anyway if Paul wasn't, but he was a little slow mm-hmm. on getting on the Luke Cage bandwagon. So he's here for part two. So in any case,
as long as you're here,
we all love you.
I made it eventually.
I was like, Liad, how are you not watching Luke Cage? And you're like, I'm busy. And I'm like, oh, come on, you got to get on that Luke Cage bandwagon. But it's interesting because I do have a lot to say about part two. I think with these second parts, we speak more freely because whenever we do like part one of like the Marvel series, we tend to kind of, because not everyone is on the same episode. You know what I mean? It's always right. Like, oh, I got to watch five episodes, or I got up to episode six, I got up to episode seven. And so we're always kind of like, you know, tiptoeing around, and now we can sort of speak freely. I mean, I know, Jay, you said you still
I'm still
finished.
Too behind. Oh. I still have I'm so part-time that I did not finish the whole thing.
Well, I'll try.
I was trying to get there tonight, but it's okay. But it's okay, because I'm going to finish it no matter what. And as I said last week, I'm already in the tank for this thing. So spoilers should have little effect on me.
Well, I don't think...
Actually, I think spoilers might actually help you, to be honest.
Maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe. So
interesting.
What is... Okay, so Jay, you're about 11 episodes in. Liad, you finished.
Yeah.
I finished Saturday night, right? And I plowed through this thing. Like.
Yeah.
I guess... Yeah, even more so maybe than Jessica Jones. I don't know. No, I think I finished Jessica Jones in about a week. What are some of your guys' thoughts? Because I've spoken to some people at work as well, and I've read some reviews online, and I'm wondering, now that it's kind of almost all over as far as Luke Cage is concerned, what are some of your thoughts, your general thoughts?
Who wants to go first?
Whoever wants to go first.
I can dive in as someone who has not quite finished it yet. I'm still enjoying it. I still think it's interesting, and I'm still definitely in the tank for it, for all of the obvious reasons. The middle section is a bit funky.
Yeah.
And sort of attenuated. I feel like this has been a Marvel series issue. Where it seems like there's a couple three episodes in the middle that's like nothing's really happening.
Uh-huh.
And it feels like we're spinning our wheels a little bit. So that's sort of where I'm at. I'm like, okay, I'm ready for this story to move on to whatever the end game is, because this middle section was a bit much. And maybe built a little too coincidentally for my taste.
Yeah. What about you, Liad? What are you thinking?
Well, so I agree that it's slow, and there's a section that's a bit too slow in the middle. And I think that it is a little bit part of the Marvel, like they tend to do that. But I think this is maybe the worst of all the series as far as that goes. This is like the slowest. I think season two of Daredevil was actually maybe the best at that, because they had two storylines going at the same time, so they were able to kind of get around that. But yeah, I totally agree. And I think this whole series, because I wasn't on the first episode or first half to talk about it, but I think this whole series actually suffers a little from the fact that there's not enough action in it.
Yeah. And
that's part of the slowness too, you know, that adds to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that we're dealing. It's funny because I got so many thoughts,
Yeah,
and I was talking to a guy at work, and one of my big things, and we discussed it in our last episode. I think that this thing really suffers from the fact that Luke Cage is invulnerable. I think that stuff tends to be a little too easy for him, like physically. And I think that there's all this extra stuff because the fight scenes are so fast. Like, I think it's really interesting. Towards the end of the show, I started really getting this feeling that I was watching sort of like an 80s TV show kind of vibe where you remember like Lou Ferrigno, the Hulk or Wonder Woman, like they would never face off against like superpowered, you know, people because they couldn't stick it in the budget. Like you just, or you know, it just costs a lot of money to do that. And they didn't have like effects. And I feel like
I felt the same way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I felt the exact same way.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like part of the problem with this series is the villains. I mean, I really like I loved Cottonmouth. Like I loved Cottonmouth.
Yeah.
And spoilers, here it comes, big spoiler. Like I think it's episode 6 or 7. There's a huge turn.
7.
Yeah, 7. Okay, right. There's a huge huge turn. Something happens and basically Mariah kills Cottonmouth in like a really odd, like sort of like family argument that kind of comes out of left field. It's a really good episode, but the result of it is kind of like off. Like it's just like, there's no way that guy would get taken out like that. You know what I mean? And it's an interesting turn. I couldn't figure out like when it happened, when I liked it, but I just don't think that the Mariah character is written well enough in the second part of the series to become the villain that she needs to be.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Yeah. She's not really the villain. And that's where this whole show suffers, is she's not really the villain. And the real villain is Diamondback, sort of. You know, I mean, he only shows up at the halfway point, and it's he's not this big threatening villain. He's kind of psychotic. I mean, he's obviously psychotic, but he's not the most threatening, because while he's super psychotic, he has no superpowers. And, you know, I mean, he doesn't come off as threatening, you know, as like Luke Cage does.
Yeah.
So the big thing becomes the Judas bullets, which it's like, it's almost to me, it was like, oh, so here's the kryptonite. Like that's what this show is. Like, they don't have, they've put themselves in a corner because he is indestructible. So now we have to, you know, manufacture something. And it just, and then he spends the next episodes like kind of running from it. And then it just becomes, and then suddenly it goes from like, only one guy has this to, oh, now all the cops have these bullets too. So now it's just a guy on the run from the cops who's not bulletproof anymore. you know? And it kind of devolves a little in that way.
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me just say that the actor playing Diamondback, Eric LeRae Harvey, is amazing. That I'm just going to get out of the way. I think he's amazing.
I honestly think that everyone who's acting in the show is amazing at the acting.
Yes.
And I do think that the writing is really good. I just felt like it was a little disjointed. And like you said, Christian, I felt like it was like this weird thing where they didn't have the budget to give him superpowers for the whole thing. So they're like, we'll just give him a super bullet. And then later, at the very end, we'll give him this suit that kind of gives him superpowers. Sorry, spoilers. But that and I don't want to know. I don't know if you want to talk about the end fight now, but then there's that big end fight,
yeah,
which I have my thoughts on.
So
as well.
I got thoughts on that too. But let's go back a little bit because
sure. You know, I jump ahead. I know.
No, it's totally awesome.
Sorry,
I'm totally with you. But Jay, I'm wondering if you're thinking the same thing at all that we are, because
very, very much. Like that's exactly it. That is sort of the downfall of the Luke Cage story and the downfall of the show is that, yeah, that there's, you know, there's the Judas bullet, and he gets shot with the Judas bullet, and then he spends, like, three episodes basically moaning in pain.
Stumbling around.
Rolling around, moaning in pain, and then somehow through, you know, fake science-ery is
really bad
cured.
Fake science.
really
bad fake science.
Really, guys, like, just, you know, magic crap. Just say magic crap. Like, don't.
I didn't even have a problem with that part. My problem was that, so they have all that science mumbo jumbo, whatever, but now they're doing surgery on him while he's in an acid bath?
Wouldn't
the acid, like, go inside? I mean,
well, wouldn't it destroy the tools?
And they only took out three pieces, so it was like,
exactly.
So the whole problem was three pieces in both shots?
Well,
like,
they forgot to take the stuff out of his stomach. They took it out of his chest, and then it was like, wait, what happened to his stomach? Hello? And
I know.
What is happening here?
That was a big faux pas. But sort of like the biggest thing for me is, and I'm sorry, it's like, I think Alfre Woodard is an amazing actress. I think that she has this quirk to her that kind of like can be off-putting sometimes. Like when, like, not off-putting like in a bad way, but sort of like, what's she going to do? Like, she's a little, she has this face that kind of like looks sad all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, she looks like she's about to cry all the time.
Yeah. And that's fine. I mean, obviously a very accomplished actress. I think the problem is that, okay, so Cottonmouth bites it, right? And then you've got like an episode where like Shades is like, well, you're going to take over. And, you know, he's kind of like being like, sort of like the Lady Macbeth, where she was like the Lady Macbeth before. But the problem is that she never, like, it should have been like, okay, so Luke Cage is too powerful. He should have had villains. Because the whole series, everyone's like, what are we going to do about this guy? And there's even a scene where Luke Cage like interrupts like a gun deal or a drug bust or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they all look at him and they basically do what, you know, anytime you watch like a George Reeves Superman show where they're like shooting at him, right. And the bullets are bouncing off and it's like, guys, it's not working. You know, you're wasting bullets, you know, like they don't even try and shoot him. They just run away, you know, which is a great moment. But the thing is you don't get villains. You do in the beginning, but you don't get villains that are outthinking him, like, or outclassing him. He should be, I mean, obviously you want Luke Cage to be smart. You don't want him to be just this brawny guy, but it would be really good to have villains who are sort of like playing this chess game with him, and that's where he feels vulnerable. And it seemed like that's where you were going in the beginning, but as soon as Cottonmouth dies, they don't give the Mariah character. And it's really funny because at one point Cottonmouth even says to her, like, you can't hurt him, you can't do anything, and she goes, well, have you tried to poison him? Have you tried to drown him? Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't explore that.
That was such a good moment.
Yeah.
They don't
explore all of that is unexplored. Yep. And she becomes an uninteresting sort of villain. Like, they sort of play with it. And like, I felt like with the villains, they tried to pretend that Diamondback was always the bad guy behind him, because, you know, because Shades was always there working for Diamondback.
Yeah.
They're always talking about Diamondback as like the real big bad. And when he shows up, you expect him to be far more terrifying than he is. The performances are all great, but it's just, he's just another gibbering psychopath.
Yeah.
And he's just a guy with a gun. Like,
exactly.
And not only that, he's not even that smart or tactical. Like, you know, he doesn't set everything up in a really tactful way where he, like, is forcing Luke Cage to do what he wants and pushing him where he wants. And, like, he's not doing any of that. He's just kind of reacting.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much like they never sort of engage in that chess game of like, hey, like you're the muscle, but I've got the brains and I can outsmart you. Like with every step, I've got all the criminal connections. I mean, it's really weird because you look at sort of something like Daredevil and you have sort of the Wilson Fisk character and his like sort of consigliere, and the consigliere is sort of like the brains behind the operation. And then once he gets killed, like that's when Wilson Fisk starts coming into his own, and they seem to be doing that with Mariah. But then once Cottonmouth dies, she spends like up until the end of the series, she's kind of just like rambling around without a plan. Like, and then
even at the end of the series, she just still comes off as like almost like a patsy, because like it seems like she's being manipulated by Shades for the most part, you know?
Right.
I think it's only until the very end of the series where she kind of like comes into her own. You know what I mean? But part of the problem is, you know, there's that one scene that I just had me banging my head against, like, my coffee table, where she shows up with Shades to the barbershop, and they're like, we have this file, and it will exonerate you of, like, any charges that you went to jail for. And Luke Cage is kind of standing there, and they're all discussing it, and I'm like, why are we having this conversation? You can knock somebody out with the tap of your, you know, just walk over there and take it. Like, why are we even, what is this discussion that we're having? Like, this is the most moronic thing that I've ever seen, you know? And I was just sort of like stunned by that. There's definitely sort of it seems like they started off with a really good sort of thread of where they wanted to go. And then once Cottonmouth buys it, it's just like that thread gets pulled and there's like no carpet left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Cottonmouth was so charismatic. I hated it when he died. Like, there's actually a villain that I was really, you know, one of those villains where I was like, no, don't kill him. I want more.
Right, where, you know, you really enjoyed that presence. And like, then when Diamondback gets in, it's the whole thing about his dad and them being brothers. And it's so like
Star Wars
submerged
thing.
And not. It's Star Wars-y, but it's just so submerged, and in a way it just feels so coincidental. I mean, I don't know if in the last two episodes it becomes clear that Diamondback has tracked him there and has put all of this in motion.
Because
otherwise, just like, so you just happened to run afoul of people who happened to be doing business with your illegitimate half-brother who sent you to jail.
Exactly.
It sort of comes off that way and sort of comes off like he's been tracking him, but they never really get into that or cover it. So there definitely is that incidental piece as well. I was going to say something to what you both were saying, that there was that one moment where Mariah does talk about like drowning him and all that, and then Cottonmouth also blackmails him at one point, and right before he dies, you know. And so it seemed like they were starting to kind of get around
the fact that he has
those powers, and then he dies, and then Diamondback comes in, and then Judas bullets, and then, you know, it's all downhill from there as far as that part of it goes.
The Judas bullets thing really bugged me as it got expanded, because there was this thing, you know, they set it up where it's like, dude, you can only get it in Ukraine, and you know, how much does it cost, a bullet or something, whatever.
And then suddenly, oh, well, we can remanufacture this and just make it for everybody.
Yeah, sell it to the SWAT team.
We'll just melt it down.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, you guys don't understand how a bullet works. You don't melt down one bullet and it doesn't make tiny other bullets.
Well, and then, you know, it's also sort of like you find out that it's part of the alien tech that came down from, like, you know, the Avengers movie. And you know, it
is
just...
Is that what they're talking about?
I think sort of by the end...
Yeah, that's what they implied.
Like, offhand, somebody says, like, the alien tech. And the thing is like, okay, it's great if you only have one or two and you're sort of setting up this game of, like, you know, the most dangerous game of, like, hunting him through the city. But it just doesn't... Mm-hmm. go anywhere, because once you give it to everyone, exactly like you said, Liad, it's it's just like, it's ineffective. It just becomes like, it makes the hero not as unique as he was before. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it really takes him down to just being, I mean, it almost brings it down to like, he's just a dude running away from the cops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In a hoodie.
He's the fugitive.
You know?
Yeah, and speaking of running away from the cops, the episode that very much bothered me, and it is the pseudoscience episode where he goes and he finds the doctor, him and Claire go and find the doctor. But it's like, I think they waste so much time with other stuff and they don't focus on like sort of important details, because by that point, like, Luke Cage is probably the most wanted man in New York City. And if you've ever been in a city, or specifically New York City, when they're looking for somebody, their face is like everywhere. And there was a part of me that they were like, how did he get out of the city? Like, because I'm like, there's
drive
no
to
way.
Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. A drive to
drive
Georgia.
All the way to Georgia, bleeding in a car.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah.
And like, at no point does he get stopped. Is there a roadblock?
Nope.
Do they figure? And these are the sort of things that I feel like, especially towards the latter half, where they start taking advantage of, or taking your intelligence for granted, where it's like, oh, it just happens.
Right.
And you can do that with some stuff, but if you do it too much, at some point it's just like, yeah, that didn't, you know, it's just no good.
Exactly. And
speaking of intelligence, the general intelligence of characters in the show drastically goes down as the show goes on.
Yeah.
And that was really frustrating, especially with main characters like Misty. Where it's like, and then the old captain, and then the new captain, and everyone's like, you know, I mean, it's just so like, oh, we're after Luke Cage. It's Luke Cage, but we got to focus on Luke Cage. Like, but all this other stuff just happened, but we need to focus on Luke Cage. But there's multiple guys with guns. It's Luke Cage. Like, wait, what is going on? Like, none of this makes sense. And you guys can't like take the, it takes so much for them to budge even slightly, you know? And
well, the biggest, can we just get rid of like the crappy boss thing in TV? Like from now until forever. Like, I just remember that this became like a thing in like 24 when I started noticing it years and years ago. And then you have like a cop show, or you have like a hero show or something. And then it's like, oh, here comes the crappy boss to piss on everyone's parade.
Right.
And, you know, to basically contradict everything the hero is saying, to not believe in anything the hero is saying. And so you've got this new police captain who's got like a beef with Misty, and it just after a while it's just like, oh god, this is just so stereotypical TV, you know what I mean, where it's just
right,
like, come
exactly
on.
and just stupid. I mean, like, the framing Luke Cage for that second murder is so dumb, mostly because, like, I mean, for both of them really, because like, he has an alibi witness. Like, I understand if for whatever reason you don't like totally trust it, but for the first, for Cottonmouth's murder, he has a like legitimate alibi witness. Like, even if they picked him up, they're not going to hold him for long.
No,
I'm like, what's the point here?
Yeah,
why are we going through all this?
Yeah,
like that cop part, and Misty is still, again, the performance is so amazing, and the writing is so
great
that like, she is just wonderful. That you just want it to be better. You know, you want
it really
to be smarter.
I really think it is that it's just these weird like tropes that they fall back on, because other than those things, everything in it's really good, and the show is still really good. I mean, there's a ton of great stuff in it. I mean, the feeling and the overall environment and feeling of the city and the character of all that is fantastic, and I'm not even a New Yorker, and it's fantastic, you know?
So,
like, there's a lot of really good stuff in it, and I think the show is so, for the most part, is so good that it actually, like, the parts that aren't as good just come, you know, it puts a spotlight on those parts, because the rest of it is so good, you know?
Yeah.
And
right.
It's it's frustrating because we don't want that anymore. We want it. We're a little tired of it.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, and I think we also said in the last episode, I think that music and that environment and a certain amount of the pacing is what you're falling back on because of the lack of sort of action or the lack of sort of like real movement throughout the series. Because I feel like at a certain point, I did feel like, okay, this is kind of moving a little slow, guys. I mean, we've got a guy with like, you know, real superpowers. We should at some point, you know, be throwing something at him than, you know, dudes with guns. And, you know, the Judas bullet is kind of like an attempt at that, but it's just, it goes on for too long.
It's a bad attempt.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing about the Judas bullets, too, is it's a bad attempt because it would have been far more interesting and entertaining had the criminals kind of organized and came at him from different, you know, came at him in different ways, not only going after innocent people, not only going after the people that are close to him, but like, can he survive a dump truck, you know, running into him?
Maybe.
I would like to see that, you know. I mean, like, you could get pretty crazy with it and really put him in danger because he is very, very strong and his skin is practically impenetrable. But that is not the same as being Superman. He is not indestructible.
No.
He hit him with a garbage truck. Like, you know, I mean, in the first, not in the first one, in the previous show, in what's it called?
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones, she shoots him with a shotgun point blank and he almost dies. Yeah. Like, this, he is not indestructible. Just go at him harder.
Especially since
he doesn't take precautions. He just walks in like an idiot. I mean, even in the end when they all have Judas bullets, he's just strolling in. It's like, you do remember the guy that has Judas bullets. Like, you were just on your back for three episodes. Well, like, come on.
That's definitely the other thing too, is that you've got this guy who throughout the, especially particularly the origin series, this guy knows how to fight. You know what I mean? Like, this guy really knows how to fight. And they never get anybody. I mean, talk about a perfect opportunity to sort of like bring in the hand, or like, they never get anybody who sort of like can fight better than him. You know what I mean? Because you always see like all these martial arts movies and you always hear people talking about martial arts. Like, it's about subduing your opponent. It's about using their size against them. And they never do anything like that. Like, yeah, this guy's super strong, but couldn't you have like, I don't know, like say somebody like Stick or something, you know, show up and be like, and whoop his ass and him not be able to do anything about it, you know, or set something up for Iron Fist, you know?
Absolutely. Like, kind of challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Or even the Punisher could have made a show. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there's a lot of options. It didn't even have to be one of the characters, but they didn't take advantage of any of that. And I have to bring up the last fight now because, you know, at the very end, they give his, you know, brother a suit that gives him superpowers to match Luke Cage. And the suit practically gives him the powers just to match Luke Cage. And then it's really like this, it's supposed to be this knockout brawl, but it was really underwhelming.
Well,
honestly,
it's really funny, and here's the thing: is that he's apparently had this suit for a while now, and he only decides to whip it out like when things get like really dire and the whole situation is falling apart for him. And I'm like, you couldn't have whipped that out like six episodes? Like, the Judas bullet didn't work, and you're like, oh, let's escalate now. You know what I mean? They don't do that, and then by the time when the suit shows up, I mean, it's really interesting because I've gone back and read some of the early issues of Luke Cage. And while it doesn't look like his suit, like, because in the show, in the comic, the suit is like a snakeskin, like green sort of suit. But the look of the suit is a little snake-like. And I was like, damn, they went there. So I kind of gave them kudos for that. Like, it looks like he's like the chest is like a little ribbed, and the head looks like a little bit like sort of like a cobra. If you know, it's sort of, they don't overdo it, but The thing is
it's an homage to the original design.
Yeah, to the original design, absolutely. But the thing is like you're right, Leah. They have this fight, and it starts off really good. Like it starts off, there were definitely a couple of times where I was like, "Oh damn!" Oh, and then they try and do this thing. Like I would say, the last like maybe four episodes really start to delve into cornball, like really, especially starting off with maybe that Method Man episode where like he goes into the bodega or whatever and it's like, hey, aren't you, and then the guy's like rapping on the radio and everyone's wearing like hoodies with holes in them, and I was like, I know what you're trying to do, but you're lathering it on a little thick.
I'll disagree with you though, because I disagree with you on that purely because like I know what you're saying. I get where you're coming from, but I was watching it with my girlfriend, and she loved that. Not necessarily the rapping and the part with the Method Man, but the whole part where everyone's wearing the hoodies and like everyone's kind of, you know, helping him out in that way. That rallying, like that was a big thing, and she really liked it. So I get your point. It is kind of corny. This whole series has a bit of corniness to it more than any of the other Marvel stuff.
It really does.
And he is cornier than all the other Marvel characters from the Marvel Netflix. I mean, they even point it out because he says some really corny stuff to what's her name? The night nurse. I can't remember her name right now.
The night nurse. Claire.
Claire Temple. Literally says some really corny stuff and she goes, "You're so corny."
Yeah.
So, okay.
But the thing is like, and I get that and I appreciate it. And I even said in the last episode, like, I love the fact that you've got a guy who's like almost like Captain America, where he's like, watch your language, like sort of thing. And this like morality. And there is a bit of that I appreciated, where it's like, yeah, I get it. Like, we've got a hero for the neighborhood. We've got we finally got like, you know, like a black hero that we can root for and all that. It just goes on a little thick. And then by the time you get to that final fight, like you have this moment where like Luke Cage actually says like, I'm not going to fight you anymore, man. I'm not going to. And then 2 minutes later, they're fighting again. Like, he's like,
I really wish in that moment that he would have said, I'm not going to fight you. And the other guy, you know, lunges at him and then they just take him out with the Judas bullets. Like, I was hoping that's what was going to happen.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing is that last fight starts off really good, goes for a while, and then Luke Cage is kind of getting his ass kicked. And then he finally says something to the effect of like, I'm not going to fight you. You're my brother. Like, we shouldn't be fighting or something, which is very sort of typical of like superhero stuff that I've seen on TV. Right. You know, like, I'm beat up. I'm not going to. And then the fight starts again. And it only lasts for like a couple of more minutes. And then you've got the crowd chanting like, Luke Cage, Luke Cage. And it's just like, oh God, we've like really gone over the deep end at this point. And then, the fight ends like super abruptly. Like, cause he takes him out and it's so anticlimactic. It's just like, it builds. And then it kind of stops. And then it just like starts again and stops immediately. And you're just sort of like, that was really anticlimactic.
But even the build, like a lot of the build wasn't all that exciting. I mean, the very beginning when they're in the barber shop and they're like about to start the fight and just start the fight, it's really interesting because they're just starting it and you're expecting this really knockout brawl. And it kind of starts that way. You know, Luke Cage like throws him around a few times and it's funny, and but still he still takes a bunch of punches. So you feel like there's some danger, and then it falls into the street and then suddenly it really loses steam. You know? And then all the stuff you said happens and you're like, okay.
Well, and that's definitely it. Like, there's definitely some sequences where they get thrown into cars. And I actually said like, wow and damn a couple of times during the fight, because I was like, we're doing this. Like, there's crunching cars and you know what I mean? Like, okay, we're going to go there. Yeah. And I was kind of excited by that. But then by the time like it ended, you were just sort of like deflated. And then there's like something, the final episode is sort of the biggest mess besides the episode of them going to like Georgia or whatever, or wherever they went to find the doctor.
Yeah.
The final episode becomes like a mess of like, we got to wrap this up. And then we've got to have like all this stuff like leading towards the end, and we've got to kind of have it in a bow. And it just,
but
it,
not in a bow too.
It kind of does, because you sort of are left with, you know, the dude finds the folder that has all the evidence, the chess player, you know, in the barbershop,
right?
Which they kind of like left a little bit, like, where did that go? It got dropped. And you know, Luke Cage is kind of like taken off to jail, but you know he's going to get out at some point. And
right.
Claire and him kind of like resolved to like be together. Like, yeah, we're going to, like, this is it. And they do leave the stuff with Mariah a little bit open-ended, you know, and kind of like, that was another thing that bugged me about the final episode, and kind of like the most asinine way possible. Like, they have a witness to the witness who was going to like turn evidence against like Mariah gets killed. And, you know, it's just kind of out of nowhere.
Am I the only one who thinks Misty Knight just ended up being like a really bad cop?
I mean,
by about midway through, she's not a very good cop.
No, yeah. She's kind of all over the place. Going back to Misty Knight for just a sec, what did you guys think about that episode where she's kind of being interrogated? Because that was another thing where I was like, we're treading too much water here, people. This does not need to be this long. I appreciate that we're trying to get into her personality, but this is way too long. We should be moving on. What did you guys think of that?
I completely agree. It entirely felt like treading water. And I was like, this is a great character study. I don't need this to happen here.
Yeah.
Like, this is not what the show should be at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it mostly just made that, like, this cool, sassy, kick-ass character feel just a lot weaker, especially how we got there. And it was like, really? She's beating up on Claire Temple, and now we're in this, like, therapy session, and I just couldn't.
That's the thing with me, though, is that I'm watching this and I'm like, guys, how many times have we seen cops throw people around like in a room on a TV show? Like, yeah. I was like, I understand like that this is not something we should condone at all, like in real life. But Jack Bauer does it like every other episode. So like, why do we have to have this 40-minute therapy session with Misty Knight where she kind of has like a breakthrough as to like why she's not, you know, achieving what she wants to achieve or whatever? I just didn't feel it was necessary, you know?
Especially if there were going to be no
consequences.
What was that, Jay?
Especially if there were going to be no consequences. I thought for a second that her boss was still going to be like, and you're still fired. But then nope, she's just still a cop.
Yeah, absolutely. What were you going to say?
I totally agree with you. There were no consequences. And I feel like the biggest issue with that was that they really didn't develop her character anymore. And Misty Knight in the comics, like, she does have a bionic arm,
and they don't follow her magically
and they
healing
don't follow
arm.
Through.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and they don't follow through. And she's not. In, as far as I know, she's also not a cop anymore. She used to be. Like, they keep setting up that she's not going to be a cop anymore. That she is either fed up with the system and going to quit or get fired, and they don't follow through on that. Her arms, they set up her arms going to be, you know,
amputated,
and they don't follow through on that. It's like, okay, so if we're going to do all this character development with her, why aren't we actually going to move her forward? If you're not going to move her forward, then why do all this character development with her? Because nothing has changed at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like, so why bother?
So
there's no point.
The thing is, and you're absolutely right, 100%. I kept thinking, like, the biggest thing is, like, they have that siege in the club, and they're in the basement, and she gets shot through the arm, and even Claire says, like, this is really bad. Like, you've been shot through the artery and whatever. Then they rescue them, and she gets looked at by like a paramedic. I don't even think she really goes to the hospital at any point. And
she goes later after the fact, but yeah, I'm with you on that. I know.
Sling is gone, and she's like waving the arm around, pointing at people, like doing normal stuff with it. And I was like, dude, you just got shot through the artery. Like, what are you, like, you can't be waving your arm around like that. And to me, it's like, it's like this really weird thing where it's like they want to kind of keep these Netflix shows like as grounded and sort of like quote unquote realistic as possible. But like that's a perfect opportunity because I don't know if you guys have noticed like the opening credits, it says Netflix and ABC Studios like in the beginning. And I'm like, why couldn't you have Misty Knight? Like she's going to lose her arm. They leave a cliffhanger. And then guess what? She shows up like on an episode or two of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and it's like, we can rebuild her or whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, these are like perfect cross opportunities and they don't take advantage of it.
Right.
You're absolutely right. Go ahead.
There's all that sort of like internecine like battles between the movie division and the Netflix division and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which seems to be like everyone's sort of redheaded stepchild that no one wants to be associated with anymore. you're exactly right. That would be a great place for, you know, what Arrowverse does so well.
Yeah.
Having characters also pop up in interesting places and in interesting ways that the Marvel is not that interested in doing.
Yeah.
How is it that there have been, this is now the fourth Netflix show, how is it that they didn't cross any of the characters over into the show for even an episode? Like, how did that happen? Like,
Especially with Claire,
when they only sort of mention them. So I'm unclear, Jessica Jones is still around.
And he didn't leave on horrible terms with her, if I remember correctly.
They had a legitimate connection. That's the other thing where I'm like, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage have, like, a real thing.
Yeah.
So I don't understand.
And then how is it that that Claire is okay with being with Luke Cage, but not okay being with Matt Murdock because he's of the stuff he does? Claire left. She doesn't want to be a part of Daredevil because of the lifestyle.
Really, Daredevil's really self-destructive though, dude. Like Daredevil, like I don't think Luke Cage and Daredevil are in the same headspace at all. I think Luke Cage is a little bit more grounded, wants to sort of like give it up a bit more, and I think Claire sees potential in him, whereas like Matt Murdock, that dude is messed up in the head. No.
But she constantly encourages him to go do more dangerous stuff.
No, I don't think that's it. I think that he...
Not with the Judas bullet.
I think with the Judas bullet, I could see what you're talking about that. But there's if you look at Matt Murdock and Daredevil and you look at Luke Cage, they are two completely different headspaces. And I could see...
Sure.
Obviously, Claire Temple likes the dangerous men. Let's not... skim over that at all.
Clearly.
But obviously, Luke Cage is definitely a much more grounded, sort of realistic, like, I would say maybe even decent human being than Matt Murdock is. Because Matt Murdock, he is just a glutton for punishment. Matt Murdock enjoys being a punching bag. Like, Matt Murdock gets a thrill out of, like, breaking the law, putting himself in. Like, Matt Murdock is kind of damaged, dude. Like, really damaged. I love him. I've always loved Daredevil. But if you look at him through the spectrum of any kind of psychoanalysis, that dude is fucked up. So, I mean, and I don't think that Luke Cage is like that at all. I think Luke Cage is a much more sort of like a regular average dude that keeps getting put into moral choices that, any of us having maybe the ability or power that he had would want to do. You know what I mean? Whereas like Matt Murdock keeps getting the crap beat out of him, keeps breaking the law, keeps breaking his oath to the bar and to society in general.
And plus,
he doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's a little further out there.
He lives a double life. Like, I mean, that's the thing about Luke Cage, that Luke Cage is just Luke Cage.
Yeah.
There's nothing else. And he doesn't hide his powers. He's just a guy with powers. A little bit, but like...
He tries.
Once he embraces it, he's like, yep, I'm Luke Cage. I'm bulletproof. I'm not pretending to be something I'm not. I'm trying to do what's right in the world. Whereas Daredevil is a bit more like, I'm trying to fight people all the time.
No, I mean, but I totally get what you're saying. And they do sort of like... bring up Matt Murdock a little bit, where Claire keeps saying, like, I know a lawyer.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh,
but that's, and that's kind of frustrating, because it's like, haha, yeah, we're going to tease at it. And they even mention, Jessica Jones at one point, and the Purple Man, they mention them at one point for just a moment. So it's kind of like this little wink nod, and it's like, okay, I understand why you wink and nod at the Marvel movies, but come on, we know that this is all in the same place. Like, this is all in New York. This isn't that far from each other. And we know that Jessica Jones knows Luke Cage. Come on.
That's right.
But here's,
get some
the
crossover
thing
here.
I really feel like, and I don't know, Jay, maybe you can speak to this a little more. I think that this is an important series in its own way. Like, and you alluded to this in the last episode, and I feel like this is also historically, maybe not, I don't know, culturally or whatever, but historically is an important character in the Marvel universe. And I think if you're going to give, you know, sort of the first African-American Marvel character a series, I think it very much kind of has to stand on its own a bit, you know, have its own space. I think maybe that's why they're not bringing other people into that. Am I off on that, Jay, or what do you think?
No, I think that that's right. I think that's the intention, and it's true. I mean, I don't necessarily need all of that, and I know they're building towards the Defenders, and yeah, I do hope that in Iron Fist that there is a greater sense of that integration, because it's a little weird that they're so discreet. Like, I almost wanted, like, Jessica Jones to happen in the middle of this series of Luke Cage.
Okay.
That, like, it would have been interesting to me. That would have been interesting to me, that, like, the events of Jessica Jones are, like, this is a story that's not about that, but would be affected by that, as opposed to this, where it happens after, but
we're
there's none of
it,
the sort of the emotional resonance, yeah, for Luke Cage about what he went through in dealing with Jessica Jones. And, like, all of that, like, that was a big emotional arc for him as a character that's kind of frustrating here. And also frustrating because I know they're just doling this out bit by bit till they get to the Defenders and get all four of these characters in one place. And I'm like, guys, just get there already.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, right, like,
yeah,
there's
they,
no need.
They are kind of ignoring, like, everything that happened in Jessica Jones. And also, I will, another thing, a little bit of a tangent, but this, the one thing that I found confusing was, like, in Jessica Jones, Luke Cage owns a bar. He has an employee. He, you know, he's getting over his grieving, you know, he's getting over his dead wife. He's grieving sort of, like,
yeah,
but he's also keeping to himself. And then, you know, the bar blows up and all that stuff happens to Jessica Jones, and he needs to, I don't know, deal with things, so he leaves. And then suddenly, when this show starts, he's in Harlem, he's working for Pops, he's working for the other place, he's getting all his money under the table, and it feels very disjointed. In the beginning, I actually was wondering if this was a flashback, like, to before.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And then as time goes on, you find out that he escaped, you know, from prison, and he changed his name, and he did all this stuff. And it's like, well, wait a second. This doesn't seem like the same guy who owned a bar, who had an employee, was taking care of himself, was doing all this stuff. You know, it felt very, very different, personality-wise and also story-wise. You know,
well,
the fact,
yeah. I know that the last time when we talked about part one, I know that my wife basically was like, is this before or after Jessica Jones? Because you couldn't figure out, like, immediately. Mm-hmm. And then I think we were like, oh, no, it's definitely after. But did he own the bar, or did he just work there?
No, he owned the bar.
He owned that bar. Yeah, that's a good point. I actually totally forgot that he owned that bar and lived upstairs.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, they kind of never go into... I mean, the bar got blown up, right? That's what I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But they never go into, like, him trying to recover it. It's kind of like they started him off, like, at a complete and completely... Wow, that's, like, a very comic book thing to do, though, too. Like, it's a very...
Yeah.
You know, you would see a comic book character, like, guest star or be introduced in a different series, and then they would get their own series, and it would be, like, all this backstory added and all this other stuff, and you're kind of like, wait a minute, this isn't... the same thing almost. So that's, I mean, it's not an excuse for it, but it kind of, yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, I feel like you're right, Liot. I feel like it is sort of, he is kind of very separate from the guy that we saw in Jessica Jones in a lot of ways. But I mean, in Jessica Jones, it also seemed like he kind of very much wanted to be left alone. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't want to mess with people too much. He didn't want to get involved with stuff. And it isn't until like that sort of bar fight where him and Jessica hook up that anything special about him is revealed. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Interesting.
And I don't know. It's there is a bit of sort of like recap retconning that happens here. That is a little like guys, come on. And I hadn't even thought about it because it had been so long.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's again why I almost wish that Jessica Jones happened like in the middle of this, just to see what that did to his character and what that did to his sort of worldview, etc. But you know, as you're saying, like this. I don't know. I feel like they could. They were fine with it as is to make it the series that it is, because you know, as you alluded to, and I've mentioned before, that one of the reasons I'm in the tank for it is because it is so very, very, very black, in all the good ways and all sort of the right ways.
Yeah.
I would like to make a comment about that.
Yeah, because
I
actually heard before I started watching the show, because I started watching a little late. And I heard that some people had been complaining, and I can't say specifically who or anything, but I heard that there were complaints online that it's too black and it's or something like that. And and I didn't get that at all.
I really
enjoyed the show. I actually really enjoyed that part of it. And I thought it was very a lot of the issues were also very timely with all the stuff that's happening. Yeah. In America right now with like the police stuff and the, you know, all of that. I thought it was very timely and really, really cool. The only part where it felt, and I don't really mean this, but I'll explain, that it felt too black was they referenced a ton of stuff that I am completely unfamiliar with. Granted, I grew up partially in Israel, so I'm missing a huge gap of like my childhood not being in America. So, and, you know, I'm also white, so, you know, I may have not been part of that anyways, but, you know, I'm very, very removed from that. So some of the stuff that they're referencing, I'm like, they just had, like, a whole conversation, and I don't know what they're talking about. And my memory is not good enough to pull this stuff up on Wikipedia as I'm going along. Like, I just can't do this.
That's so funny that so many people said, No, go ahead.
There are a few things like that that kind of just went over my head where I was just like, okay, I know this is something important and like I get the very basic gist of it, but I totally missed that. And I would like to understand it at some point.
That's really funny because it's so funny because people were like saying like, oh, it's too black or stuff like, and I just found it very universal. Maybe it's because of like around where we grew up and like living in Los Angeles. Like I didn't find it, any of it like off-putting or confusing like at all, obviously Liot, you know, where you grow up, you're going to miss cultural references, but I mean, I'm from that area, so that's
right.
A lot of it like felt
I'm referring more towards when they talk about certain literature or history, stuff like that. Like I didn't learn the same history that, you know, the kids growing up here learned because I was in another country.
Let me tell you something. There's a lot of TV shows that refer to a lot of literature that I don't understand. And I was raised here and I'm just stupid. So
I'm just saying those were the only things. And I'm not big on literature in general. So I miss a lot of stuff like that.
Kids
too.
Read.
But,
you know,
there was like there was some history stuff that I know that they were referring to. And I'm like, I just don't know what they're talking about. And I said, I just can't pull it up fast enough on my phone while I'm watching it. But that really is that is not really a complaint about the show at all. I enjoyed all of that. And I agree with you, Christian.
What?
Even as someone who has that kind of like separation, it still just felt, you know, timely and, I don't know, normal, not like this, oh, this is craziness. And I don't know who thinks that. Like, I hope it's like two people that are making a lot of noise online.
Well,
like,
it's interesting, that's what I'm hoping. What's his face? The lead actor. Didn't he say that wearing the hoodie all the time, Mike Coulter, he said that it was kind of like a dedication or reference to Trayvon Martin or something like that?
Yeah, it is absolutely. And yeah, like that, he said that it's a nod to and a reclamation of it, like being bulletproof and wearing the hoodie is key. I mean, there's all of that, like, and all the stuff you saw about, like, all the stuff about the policing and all the stuff about gentrification and the hood and all of that is really there and obviously real present. But you're right, Leah, the thing is, particularly like the first few episodes, like any scene that like Luke is talking with Pops, or a lot of the scenes where Cottonmouth and Black Mariah are talking, are just riddled with like deep references to like very, very, very like specifically African American cultural thing. It's amazing to see that you're right, that they don't explain, they don't go out of their way, and it's all steeped in the show, especially the beginning part, which is one of my bummers about the last section of it, is so steeped in Walter Mosley, the great black detective writer, in that sort of noir and that sort of milieu, and they almost build Luke Cage as an invulnerable detective who's just like righting wrongs in the hood and trying to figure out where things have gone so wrong, that I felt like get sort of lost in the second half. And it's kind of a shame that they are.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think I even said that the last episode, I felt like there was a real Spike Lee like influence. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of like what Spike Lee does too. A lot of his stuff is filled with all this like history and, you know, references to old music and literature and stuff. And it's sort of like, if you're not into that or you haven't been exposed to that, it can be very much an education, you know, it can be a very big like learning experience. And that's one of the things that, that I did love about this show, that they were trying to weave that sort of stuff in there and, you know, sort of identify it as like, this is, you know, almost in a way a part of our history as well, because we're sort of taking this character and now we're putting him in a different media for the very first time, and it sort of means something, you know what I mean? And they're taking that opportunity to make these literary, music, you know, cultural references. And, you know, I mean, apparently, like, didn't the premiere, or like the first weekend that it premiered, there were like all these people watching it, that it shut down, certain people couldn't watch it.
Crashed Netflix for a bit.
So, I mean, that's just like an amazing opportunity. I mean, it's not like Mr. Rogers, hey, come sit down, I'm going to put on a sweater and I'm going to talk to you about it. But it's very much sort of like woven into the fabric. And I very much appreciated that sort of thing. You know, I personally am still waiting for my Latin Avenger to show up. I don't know when that's going to happen.
Is there one? There's got to be one,
There's got to be one that doesn't say caramba, and there's got to be one that doesn't say like ay 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 or anything like that.
Oh, wait, no, because they're doing Sunspot. You're going to get Sunspot.
He's not an Avenger. He's not in his own series. He's an X-Man, right? New Mutant.
He's a New Mutant.
That's fine.
He's going to be in the New Mutants TV show.
Yeah, on Legion, that Legion thing, or...
They're apparently developing a standalone New Mutants TV show.
Oh, dude, I saw that Gen X pilot. We actually did an episode on that. That was horrible. I auditioned for it back in the day. It's a terrible. How are they going to improve? I hope they improve.
Hopefully, they're going to do better.
Knowing that,
you know what I would love to see, and we're going totally off topic here, is the next wave.
I never read that. I've always wanted to read it. I'm going to have to pick that up.
It was great. It was crazy. And it pissed a lot of people off because they didn't take the Marvel Universe too seriously. I mean, at one point, like they put out the flames of Dormammu with like just water or something. I'm not going to tell you how, because it's actually much more funnier, but you know, they do stuff like that, and it's like, those aren't real flames, it's like magic stuff that shouldn't be doable, but whatever. It was funny, so they did it. And Misty Knight's in that
that's right.
That group.
Yeah,
that's why I thought about it. That would be a fun series.
Well, Misty Knight, it's so funny that you mentioned that because Jay, you know, a little bit of a spoiler. By the end of the series, she's kind of like transformed into the Misty Knight that is in the comic. And they put her in this hairdo, like one of the last shots in the show. And she's in the club and she has the hairdo that is very much reminiscent of the comics. Like the big sort of like it just goes like out, you know, up towards the sky. You know, like those hairdos in the comics.
Which I wish they would have had the whole show, honestly.
Oh, I'd like to do
that. Separate issue.
No, I mean, I think she's obviously had different hairdos like during the course of the comics, but this one was reminded me of like John Byrne, sort of like Iron Fist, like Chris Claremont, sort of like, I was like, oh wow, they're kind of like,
oh yeah,
that's it. Like, just wait till you see it. I think it's a beautiful shot. And obviously she's a beautiful woman, but like, that is like the moment where it's sort of like, okay, this is Misty Knight. You know what I mean? Like we've got, like she's always kind of been that, but now we're sort of getting there and it's just really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like we've kind of been pulling this thing apart, but I have to say that I really did like it. And it is literally the only Marvel show that I've ended it and wanted to go back and watch the pilot. Like, again, because I remember really, really, really liking the pilot and being like, okay, this is very cool. Like, I'm down with this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm with you. Like, this is the most enjoyable. I think Jessica Jones may be, in terms of like overall storytelling, slightly better. And I enjoy the Daredevil ones, but I do not think that they're very well told.
I love Daredevil. Like, it's my favorite.
I really enjoy them, but I like Jessica Jones more, and I like this more than Daredevil.
Oh wow! I love Daredevil the most.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree. I'm not sure which I like more, if it was Daredevil or Jessica Jones. But this to me is the weakest of them all, just because there are more problems with it, and the lack of action. Like those two things combined, really made it the weakest of all. The storytelling in this one's really good, and I feel like this is strongest. I feel like this is the strongest one as far as like setting up the feeling of the world. Like this one feels, you know, more complete than the other ones.
Yeah.
But because it's just dragging in some places more than any of the other ones, and the lack of tension for most of it, definitely like those two things make it to me kind of the weakest.
I think for me it really just sort of very much loses its way once Cottonmouth dies. Like I feel like he was a very strong villain, a very strong presence, and I just feel like Alfred Woodard, I don't think she dropped the ball with Black Mariah, but I feel like that the writers very much dropped the ball with her a little bit, because I felt like the death of Cottonmouth, and I said this earlier, was very much the opportunity for her to come into her own and become like a very smart character. And instead she just kind of flounders around from episode to episode, like kind of with this weird spaced out look on her face where she doesn't know like what's happening to her. And that's not the kind of villain you need. You need somebody who's like, maybe do that for like an episode or two, but after a while, you need to have them have something kind of like what happened with the Kingpin at the end of the Daredevil show, where it's like, but with Black Mariah, it should have shown up earlier, because I think that the thing that anchored it was very much Cottonmouth. And once he was gone, I think it became a little rudderless and they were a little all over the place. So,
and in Jessica Jones, I mean, the villain in Jessica Jones is
fantastic.
I think the best one out of all of them.
You're right.
He is so good and so so menacing, and he is I mean, he may, like, without him Jessica Jones wouldn't have been nearly as good as it was, but that villain just made it so much, you know, worse or better, like, you know, both, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so And that was lacking in this one. Especially after Cottonmouth dies. And because you don't have this, like, really bad villain. I mean, even Kingpin was fantastic, you know? And when you don't have that, even in the second Daredevil, in the beginning, in the first half of it, when Kingpin isn't part of it, it does feel a little rudderless.
Totally.
There isn't a
totally
big
rudderless
villain. And then suddenly Kingpin's reintroduced and it just gave it that much more life, you know, back to the series.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was missing here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that Mariah comes across as a character that's a victim of circumstance and is not sort of like carving her own path until the very end, and even then it's sort of a little too late to redeem that character. I hope they have a season two with her, and I hope that she becomes like a stronger character, because I almost feel like the writing wasn't worthy of Alfre Woodard. You know what I mean? Like, I think that this an amazing actress, very commanding presence, and it just wasn't utilized, in my opinion. And so, I don't know. I'm hoping they do season two. Have you guys seen the preview for Iron Fist?
Yes.
Yes.
Looks so good.
It looks good, but it still bums me out.
Why does it? Oh, no. I can't get into this with you because I mean, I get
what
you're coming from.
What bums you out?
It bums me out that it's a white dude. And I know it's a white dude in the comics, but I'm just like, it's just, there's such a great opportunity, and they just didn't.
Yes and no, because I'll point something out though, that like I kind of get what you're saying, but at the same time, if they went with someone, I don't know where he's supposed to go and learn or where the group is from exactly, but if they went with an Asian actor, then you're back to like the stereotype, you know?
Yeah, I
know.
See that too.
It's different.
So there's no winning.
There's a huge fight that we can have about, like, it's a whole other thing. The trailer looks all right. It's not like I'm gonna boycott and I'm gonna watch the thing, for God's sake.
Right.
I think that
it's just a missed opportunity.
This is a fight for another time.
I understand your point, and I understand your point, and I think you have a valid point. This is as a general rule, it's a problematic thing, because there's not a lot of winning if you go either way, because you can take a different point of view either way. And it's also dealing with a lot of history, and you know, the characters are old, and
So
it is problematic.
What do you think about the
ancient
one in Doctor Strange? I mean, we're going to veer off a little bit, but what do you think about that, James?
That's some bullshit.
I don't
like
think
that
there was
just
any
come
need
on,
for
guys.
That. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
There was no need.
No, there's no need.
There's no need while, that guy who played Lopan is still alive. Like, there's just no need.
Yeah.
There's an old Asian guy out there you can find.
Yeah.
He's still around. He's still working.
Yeah, yeah.
He's been working since the 40s.
Yeah,
just hire that dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, the Iron Fist thing, I mean, I am sort of like half minority, but quote unquote minority, because I don't even think that word should be used anymore, but there's a part of me that's just like, so I mean, Jay and I've had this conversation a little bit, and I'm just so like, I want it to be the way I grew up with it, you know what I mean? And
sure,
what's that?
Oh, I said, sure, I understand. Like,
and I
you
totally,
grew up
I do
with something
with
and you want it to be like that. Let's
I totally
obvious.
Said it's just also that, like, and this is the particular thing about Iron Fist, and we'll save it for another one, the rest of it, but it's like, Iron Fist is so built in, like, the problem is built into the creation of the character of Daniel Rand that, like, it's flawed from jump. Like, from jump, it should have been better, and given the opportunity now to make it better, it just bums me out that they were like, no, we're gonna chew around the edges a little bit. And I'm like, okay. fine. You're going to make
the problem is that way.
So, Jay, let me ask you this.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I didn't mean to. I apologize.
No. I want to ask another question, because what if it's, and this is the way I'm thinking that they might go, right? And this was sort of like, and I don't know if they've ever done this with Iron Fist. Honestly, I don't know so much about the character like I do about Captain America or Superman or anything like that. But to me, it's like, what if he is, because apparently like Iron Fist is like the greatest of the greatest, right? I mean, he's right, supposed to be like the greatest fighter. But what if this guy's like the worst and he's trying to prove himself?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, what if they take
that
a spin?
That would be better.
And I'm thinking that's where they may go. That he's like an outcast of that society, that he's not considered the greatest, that he's considered like he has to prove something, you know?
That would be better, especially if he's not like, if it's not freaking Avatar and he's the savior who can do the thing that all the like
other people just
figure out how to do.
Yeah.
That's fine. If he's just, you know, average Danny, and it's like there are ways that they can make it okay. And I have enough trust that I'm like, okay, we'll figure it out. We'll give him that.
Well,
I'm still
going to
be salty about it.
Yeah,
sure.
I get it.
Well, here's the thing about Iron Fist. Like, my understanding, and I'm not that familiar with the character, but my understanding is the character, like, he's well off. He's got money. He's like a rich guy who's
Oliver Queen
becomes a martial artist and all this stuff. I mean, if they don't change that somehow, if they don't do something with it, it's going to feel a lot less, you know, real and important and any of those.
Well, apparently
things, you know?
Matt Fraction did some stuff, and I got to pick up those books because I'm dying to read them. Matt Fraction did some stuff like several years ago that people, if you look at the reviews on Amazon for the books, like they're like amazing.
Yeah.
So apparently there was some sort of like rethinking or restructuring of Iron Fist that happened a while ago that I did not read and need to read. But because I'm only familiar with the John Byrne, Chris Claremont stuff and maybe some stuff after that and Heroes for Hire. But I don't know. I totally get what Jay is saying, and I totally understand all the complaints. And I do think it's time, you know, to sort of get past that. But there is definitely a part of me that's like, I see all the arguments from different edges. But anyway, we were talking about Luke Cage. This has been Luke Cage Part 2. We've been rambling on. We had some connection problems during the episode. Hopefully you won't notice them. That's what editing is for. My name is Christian Horn. I'm on the line with Liad Goldberg and Jay Holtham. And this has been another episode of Part-Time Fanboy. You know, check us out on our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, leave us reviews on iTunes, do all the good social media stuff. We have an Instagram. We're going to be back next week with a look, hopefully, at Shin Gojira. Shin Godzilla. I cannot wait. I'm so excited. We're going to see it tomorrow night. Oh, and check out Supergirl, because I just watched the premiere before I got on, and it was awesome. In any case,
awesome.
Thank you for listening to Part-Time Fanboy. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy. Fanboy.com